This gentleman, unfortunately, could not be with us in person, but he is on Zoom. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. I got ahead of myself. I called for a Give 20 update, and I do want that. So before I introduce this gentleman, I'm going to go to Sandy Halverson.
Thank you so much. I'd hate to have to throw a tantrum up here in front of all of my friends in this hall because I didn't get to talk. I promise I will not speak as quickly as the description, the film description or the photo picture that was taken that I could not understand a word of. Remember, I'm senior. Anyway, I want to just say that when we are asked to do something, we do. We have delivered, and I hope we continue to deliver to our Give 20 campaign. We're trying to, it would be great if our final presenter of Give 20 data could say that we have over 500 contributors. What you give makes a difference. And one of the ways that it is really helpful is when we ask other companies to consider matching grants, we can say we have X number of members who contribute, and these are members making these contributions to our White Cane, Ten Brook, Jernigan, and Sun funds. So it's been a great convention. I thank you all for all of your contributions. Keep them coming, and we'll learn something else later today. I'm finished now. No more tantrum.
Okay. I believe both Give 20 and Pack Tables will be open till 3 p.m. So you got to get in there before 3 p.m. to be included. So please do that now or at the beginning of the next session because your time is running out. Okay. I would like to move now to a presentation, which we're very honored to have. The chair with us of the National Council on Disability. The National Council on Disability is an independent federal agency charged with advising the President, Congress, and other federal agencies on all aspects of disability in the United States since 2021. Andres Gallegos has been the leader for NCD. He serves as chairman, and that gives him a lot of responsibility for directing the work that is done by this agency. His background is in the law, where he's been recognized widely as a leader in disability rights. He's published widely, trying to advance the ideals that people with disabilities are full participants in society and have the right to live in the world. Unfortunately, he was not able to be with us in person, but we are very happy that he is joining us virtually for the first time at this convention. Please welcome Andres Gallegos.
Enhancing medical device accessibility, ensuring the inclusion of people with disabilities in clinical trials, the eradication of subminimum wages, the designation of people with disabilities as a presumed eligible population under the Small Business Administration's 8A Business Development Program. They may seem disparate at first, however, these topics are interconnected by a common overarching condition, nurturing a society rooted in inclusivity, a society that cherishes and values all of its citizens, regardless of their abilities, a society that understands that diversity is a source of strength and enrichment, a society that strives to provide equal opportunities for health and employment, but also empowers people with disabilities to become entrepreneurial leaders, a society that includes the full participation of the disabled and understands absolutely nothing without us. President Riccobono, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I am a member of the disability community, class of 1996, having sustained a spinal cord injury resulting in quadriplegia. What a privilege to address the National Federation of the Blind and its attendees of its national convention on topics of profound importance that directly touch upon your lives. On July 26th, we will celebrate the 33rd anniversary of our civil rights legislation, legislation that promised full participation of all of us into every aspect of American society. Over the past three decades, we've seen a surge in accessible public and private spaces, an increase in reasonable accommodations in the workplace, improved access to public services, and a shift toward a more inclusive societal mindset. Indeed, the landscape of our society has been dramatically altered and improved by the provisions and protections offered by the ADA. However, as we all know, our journey towards complete inclusivity and equality is far from complete. We have considerable work to do. One only needs to step outside the National Federation of the Blind's beautiful facilities in Baltimore and attempt to utilize the city's sidewalks to know that work still needs to be done. But the work that is truly needed to be done is to empower each other to assert our civil rights collectively so that we hold to account those that are holding us back, to address ableist policies and practices wherever they arise, all to get closer to a society where individuals are not defined by their disabilities. The National Council on Disability, the federal voice of people with disabilities, in our advisory capacity, works tirelessly to do just that, to push us closer to a time where our day-to-day life is not dictated by the challenges society imposes, but by the immense potential that lies within us, to a time where accessibility is not a privilege or reluctantly viewed as an unfunded mandated obligation, but recognized for what it is, a fundamental right, where the sound of a medical device speaking out your results is as ordinary as the chirping of birds in the morning or the rustling of leaves in the wind, where navigating websites is as effortless as finding your way around your home, a place you know by heart, where your paycheck is reflective of your talents, your skills, your dedication, and not your ability to see. Our work extends beyond that as we push closer to a time where being a person with a disability does not serve as a barrier, but instead opens doors to greater opportunities, where entrepreneurship and business leadership are reachable for people with disabilities. This is the promise of the ADA that we have yet to realize. We live in a time where technological innovations and medical breakthroughs can be made in weeks or months, where it once took years. These innovations and breakthroughs have dramatically improved the quality of life for countless individuals around the globe. Yet it's imperative that we let our federal and business leaders know that the effectiveness of any technological or medical innovation depends largely on its accessibility and inclusivity. For the over 32 million adults in America that report having trouble seeing, even when wearing glasses or contact lenses, or that are blind or unable to see at all, the need for accessible medical devices has never been more critical. Medical devices, including home medical devices, like glucose meters, blood pressure monitors, thermometers, insulin pumps, home dialysis machines, weight scales, heart rate monitors, among other devices, all have revolutionized the way we manage our health. They have transferred power from solely the hands of healthcare professionals into the hands of individuals, enabling us to monitor our well-being right from the comfort of our homes. But those who design those devices don't know what happens when those hands that seek to monitor the health can't see the readings on a device. Or what happens when a medical device isn't designed with inclusivity in mind, leaving those who are blind or have low vision unable to utilize them effectively. The answer, as all of us here know, is simple yet stark. Exclusion, disempowerment, and increased risk of health complications. Blindness and low vision should never preclude anyone from having access to the tools they need to maintain good health. When we talk about accessible healthcare, it's more than just making sure that there's a ramp for me and others like me, or sign language interpreters for the deaf. It is about ensuring that the tools we create are usable by all, regardless of their physical condition or situation. For those who are blind or with low vision, this means designing medical devices with tactile buttons, large embossed markings, voice output capabilities, or braille compatibility. It means rethinking our design process, creating devices that do not rely solely on visual cues, but also incorporate auditory and tactile feedback. It means having members of our community at the table during the design process. Nothing without us. In February 2022, we released our framework to end health disparities of people with disabilities, designed as a blueprint for our federal leaders to address the decades-long significant health disparities that persist between us and our non-disabled counterparts. One of its 43 components calls upon the Food and Drug Administration through administrative action to establish regulations requiring that intermediate and high-risk medical devices with a digital interface provide a blind or low vision user access to the same services and information, and generally the same ease of use as provided to a user who is not low vision or blind. Over the past year, our main focus has been on working with our federal partners to move towards the implementation of our five core components: enhanced data capturing, designation of all people with disabilities as a health disparity population, designation of all people with disabilities as a special medically underserved population, the adoption of enforceable standards for accessible medical diagnostic equipment, and funding for the development of model disability clinical care competency curricula and training. We are focusing now on moving forward the balance of the framework's components. That includes engaging the FDA to address accessible home medical devices. If we are in fact committed to addressing health disparities between us and our non-disabled counterparts, we must also ensure that we are able to participate in clinical trials. This is a matter of justice, equality, and scientific validity. We have historically been underrepresented in clinical trials, leaving a significant gap in our understanding of how treatments and interventions work for us. From a justice and equality perspective, we, like anyone else, have a right to participate in clinical research. Participation provides early access to innovative therapies that could potentially benefit others in the same community. It is therefore crucial that clinical trials are designed and conducted in ways that are inclusive and accessible for people with disabilities. From a scientific standpoint, our exclusion can lead to skewed results. Without representation from our community, we cannot ascertain the safety and efficacy of treatments for us. This lack of data may lead to unexpected or ineffectual treatments or missed opportunities for effective interventions. I am pleased to share that we are in the process of developing a policy report addressing the need for inclusion of people with disabilities in clinical trials. About one third of clinical trials in the United States utilize eligibility criteria that excludes individuals with intellectual disabilities and cognitive disabilities. And approximately two thirds of clinical trials have specific exclusionary eligibility criteria. Excluding individuals who may not be able to read or write, those requiring assistance with activities of daily living, those who do not have access to technology, or those, in the view of the research teams, do not have the ability to complete study procedures, safely engage in the research, or have the necessary health status. A study published in Health Affairs last year analyzed 97 interventional protocols in four clinical trials. Trials relating to dementia, depression, diabetes, and lung cancer. It revealed that 85% of those protocols allowed broad investigator discretion to determine eligibility. And only 18% explicitly permitted us to participate. Visual disability was stated as exclusionary criteria in 34% of those protocols. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, people with vision loss are more likely to report depression, diabetes, hearing impairment, stroke, falls, cognitive decline, and premature death. Clinical trials evaluating therapeutics and interventions to address those conditions must include people who are blind or with low vision. And while the report is yet to be completed, you can be sure that one recommendation will be that federal funds should not support clinical trials that exclude people with disabilities without evidentiary-based scientific rationale. We have to stop permitting federal funds to be used to discriminate against us, period, full stop. The principle of inclusion extends far beyond healthcare. The empowerment of individuals with disabilities does not stop at equitable healthcare, but continues through ensuring equitable opportunities in business and work as well. Thus, we shift now our focus from the laboratory to the realm of entrepreneurship and employment, exploring avenues where inclusivity once again plays a defining role. This brings us to a discussion of the Small Business Administration's 8A Business Development Program and the pressing need to eliminate subminimum wage. Both are critical areas where we need to foster greater inclusion and equality for people with disabilities. If you're not familiar with the SBA's 8A Business Development Program, it is a federal initiative designed to support and empower small businesses owned by socially and economically disadvantaged individuals. That program aims to level the playing field by providing these businesses with a range of benefits for federal sole source contracts, competitive set-aside contracts, and mentor-protege programs, among others. It provides technical assistance, training, and management guidance. A key feature of the program is its presumption of eligibility for certain groups, enabling faster and more efficient processing of applications. It embodies the federal government's commitment to diversity and inclusion in the business sector. Recognizing a vibrant, diverse business community contributes significantly to the economic health and growth of our nation. Inclusion of people with disabilities as a presumed eligible population under this program will mark a significant step toward entrepreneurial opportunities for our community. Pursuant to the Small Business Administration's regulations, a business is eligible for the 8A Business Development Program if they are, among other things, at least 51% owned and controlled by U.S. citizens who are, and I quote, socially disadvantaged individuals who have been subjected to racial or ethnic prejudice or cultural bias within American society because of their identities as members of groups and without regard to their individual qualities, end quote. The program thus presumes that Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, and Asian Pacific Americans are socially disadvantaged and presumptively eligible for the program. There is significant body of literature evidencing that people with disabilities are also socially disadvantaged. We achieve lower rates of education, employment, and financial independence. And we live in poverty at more than twice the rate of people without disabilities. We make up approximately 12% of the US working age population. However, we account for more than half of those living in long-term poverty. 17.5% of us participate in the workforce, compared to 65% of people without disabilities, directly resulting in higher poverty rates. Now, if an individual is not a member of one of the presumed socially disadvantaged groups, it does not preclude them from eligibility in the program. However, absent the presumption of eligibility, each applicant must present facts and evidence that by themselves establish that they have suffered social disadvantage that has negatively impacted their entry into the business world. And each instance of alleged discriminatory conduct must be accompanied by a negative impact on the individual's entry into or advancement into the business world in order for it to constitute an instance of social disadvantage. The National Council on Disability believes that this is an unduly significant burden to place upon each disabled entrepreneur. And given the stark evidence that people with disabilities are economically and socially disadvantaged, we should be included as a presumed eligible group. To that end, in May of last year, I wrote to the Small Business Administration Administrator Isabella Guzman to address that very issue. Since then, we've had a couple of extended meetings with the SBA's Associate Administrator and his leadership team, the most recent of which occurred this past May. I wish I could announce that there's been progress, but I cannot. There's resistance to our categorical inclusion. The SBA is encouraging us to submit a formal application for inclusion, which we, the National Council on Disability cannot as an advisory body. And therefore, we look to engage in conversation with the National Federation of the Blind on this very issue very soon. While we push for categorical inclusion in the SBA's 8A Business Development Program, the National Council on Disability continues to advise our federal partners to eliminate subminimum wages that are legally permitted under the Federal Labor Standards Act, Section 14C. Established in 1938, Section 14C allows eligible businesses to pay some people with disabilities less than the federal minimum wage. That was 1938. It is now 85 years later. Through an amendment in 1986, the wage floor was eliminated by Congress. Elimination of the wage floor has resulted in some employees with disabilities earning as little as pennies per hour. Quite often earning that little while the employer is making hundreds of thousands of dollars, and in some instances, millions of dollars from that labor. That cannot be tolerated any longer. It is a matter of basic fairness, a matter of equity. We should receive the same wage for the same work as those without disabilities. We have bills to pay, dreams to pursue, lives to lead. We deserve the dignity that comes with earning a fair wage. In closing, let us be reminded of the strength and resilience that lie within our shared vision. A vision of a time where medical devices speak to all who need them, not just those who can see. A time where the process of scientific and clinical trials does not discriminate, but includes every one of us, valuing our own unique experiences and contributions. A time where no individual's paycheck is diminished due to their visual abilities, and where entrepreneurship is not the exclusive domain of any one group, but is open and accessible to all, including people with disabilities. Each of these goals are not disparate goals. They are interconnected pieces of the same vision, a vision of society that truly sees all of its members, that truly values each and every one of us, and that truly fulfills the federal promise that was made to us 33 years ago, a promise of full participation in a society that understands nothing without us. Thank you again for this opportunity to address you this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We really appreciate you being here, and we appreciate the aggressive agenda of NCD, and especially that this particular agency takes very seriously its charge to be disability-centered. So thank you for your words, and we look forward to working on these issues with you.
Mark, thank you, sir.
NCD has been a great partner in a number of priority areas of the Federation, and we look forward to that.